Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Richard Rossi Live, and I'm very, excuse me, I'm recovering a bit from an illness. I caught a cold for my son. As some of you know, I also slipped in the tub and had a little bit of a mild concussion, but I'm doing better today. But I do apologize in advance for my voice, and hopefully I won't be coughing or interrupting the important things that Amy's going to share today. Our guest today, Amy Brill, is sharing her journey out of the Children of God, a.k.a. family. I know some of you saw Amy recently on the A&E special. She has made a courageous journey out of this cult. It's a sex cult, exploited children sexually, and women sexually were sent out to be prostitutes to recruit men into the church. She's a very courageous woman, and we're going to get, I think, more in depth today because we have more time and we're not interrupted like TV is. I studied this cult in depth in my own seminary studies in cults, and I really feel a passion to help people that have been in cults or toxic religious groups. And this is, Amy's story is truly one of the most powerful stories of an exodus from a toxic religious group I've ever heard. So we'll be back in just literally about a half a minute with Amy to go live here, and make sure you let your friends know to tune in. And by the way, this link is good in perpetuity. I know some of you have friends that wanted to hear this interview that are working or can't hear live. This link of the show, you can always share it. It'll be good in perpetuity, and they can always replay this show. So I'll be right back with Amy Brill, how she escaped the Children of God sex cult, and her and her kids are doing great today. We'll be right back with Amy Brill.
Hey, Chief, you know there's two things in this world I hate to miss. One's a Lakers game and the other's Rich Rossi Live. You gotta be cuckoo to miss this show, you know what I mean, pal? And wait till you get a load of what Rich is gonna talk about today.
Well, today we're talking about the Children of God, a.k.a. the family, and we have a powerful firsthand testimony of escape from this cult. Welcome, Amy Brill. Can you hear me okay, Amy?
Yes, fairly well.
Thank you for your courage to share your story today.
Oh, well, you're welcome.
Amy, so you grew up, were you born into the Children of God and you grew up in this? This was pretty much the only world you knew as a child?
I was one of the first children born into the cult. The cult started in the late 60s in Huntington Beach, and my father was one of the first recruits as well, with David Berg's personal family. Actually, Faith Berg, his daughter, recruited my dad on the beaches of Huntington, and my dad was from a Huntington Beach family. He was traumatized as a young boy, which made him very vulnerable. And when he was 14 years old, he was recruited into David Berg's, Jesus movement. It started out sort of like an offshoot from the Jesus people. Also, he worked with Fred Jordan. And sort of, it was a very, I guess you'd say, fundamental Christian youth movement when it first started. There wasn't a lot of weirdness at all. It was all Bible-based. They were out on the streets, converting hippies and young people that were looking for something different, something not, you know, like they were rebelling from the church system is what it was. So they did a lot of things that were counterculture, non-mainstream, you know, singing and dancing on the beach. They used a lot of music, a lot of sort of revolutionary tactics to inspire and attract the youth. So I was one of the first children born in Texas, actually, to my parents on a commune there. And both my parents were very young. They were teenagers when they had me.
Yeah, you said something very poignant that your dad had trauma, and that made him vulnerable excuse me, I'm sorry, I'm recovering from a bit of a cold and a flu, and I apologize, I'm clearing my throat a bit, but the trauma that your dad went through, that's a pretty major point, I guess, is that those of us that have had any kind of abuse and trauma sometimes are more vulnerable to that. Now, you said it was kind of the Jesus movement. Some of us remember that, the Jesus people in the 70s, the 60s. At this point with Fred Jordan and the Jesus people, was there anything, as far as you know, awry that wasn't healthy or was cultish, or was this point before it got real bad?
Yeah, this was kind of traditional. I mean, from what I see, my dad was sworn in as a minister by Fred Jordan in Los Angeles at the Mission downtown, in the Soul Clinic, I think it was called. And a bunch of the young men that had joined were sworn in as ministers. And they were very Bible-based. Everyone had to forsake all. I think one of the first clues that perhaps this was not something that was, I guess you'd say something that was an extremist, was that they all had to forsake everything to follow Jesus. But it was biblical. I mean, there's verses in the Bible that say, forsake all and follow me. That's what Christ said in the scripture. So it was used to the extreme where you need to forsake your parents, you need to forsake your family, and you need to completely cut ties with the outside world to join, you know, this Jesus movement and dedicate yourself completely, entirely to Christ. So they have the scripture behind them because, as you know, the Bible does state those things very clearly. And it was easy to sort of capitalize on that, those specific scriptures, and get people to cut ties with their families, to you know, give up all their possessions, anything that they had tying them or as a bridge over back into, you know, society. So this isolated people and basically made them more vulnerable to the cult influence because they were completely at the mercy of the community, the cult community at that point. And many of them couldn't return. Like my mother said, she would have gone back to her family, but because she had completely cut ties so abruptly and so directly, her parents wouldn't take her back in. They were like, you know, you completely cut us off and now you can't come back. And so one of the reasons she stayed in for so long and had me and my brothers and sisters was because she didn't have anywhere else to go. And she had basically blown her chances with her parents.
The isolation from family, do you know, as far as your parents, was there any concern from the family that this is starting to look cultish and trying to persuade your parents out of it? Do you know if they made any efforts that way?
Well, when later on in the, I guess you'd say mid-70s is when things started going awry, when David Berg came out with new doctrines that involved sex, and I think it was always going on behind closed doors within the leadership, and, you know, with him and Derby and his own, I guess you'd say, leadership group. But what was going on, I could hear myself, there's an echo going on, it's so distracting. So,
yes.
So basically, to recap, that's when I think a lot of people started having questions and doubts, and a lot of the leadership directly responsible in the communities were starting to abuse their power. There were very high quotas. People were sent out into the streets in the middle of winter to raise money for the cult, you know, giving out literature. When I was 5 years old on the streets of Europe, I used to stand out on the street corner with my dad while he had a guitar, and he'd be singing, and I'd be passing the hat and basically giving out literature. And we'd bring money back to the home, and that's how they would eat, and that's how they would support the people in the house. So there was a lot of, I guess you'd say, pressure on people to to raise money. My dad is a musician, so he was constantly out singing. He joined a band in Europe that actually ended up being pretty popular. And, you know, and then when the flirty fishing came out, which was where women were encouraged to go and, you know, have sexual relations with people outside to bring in and save souls, a lot of people did question and left at that time. There was a huge population that did start leaving. But the people that, like my mom and my dad, who had kids and didn't have a way back, and they didn't really have an open door back to their family, and they were in Europe, they basically were in a situation where they couldn't really physically leave. You know, they had gone so far, and they were so entrapped that by the time they realized everything had gotten really bad, it was almost like too late. And in my case, they had given me away to the leadership, and they didn't even know about the sexualization that was happening to me while I was separated from them.
And am I remembering right? And if any of this is insensitive to talk about, of course, feel free to, you know, not get into it. But am I remembering right that you were then given to Moses David Berg, the leader, as really essentially a child bride? I mean, it's very sensitive, and I don't want to do anything that re-triggers you, but I've seen on the documentaries where they have you dancing, you know, with the veils at probably, I don't know, 12 years old or 13 or something like that. Weren't you given to him as in one of his polygamous wives, so to speak, at one point?
Well, it wasn't exactly that black and white. When I first was asked to leave my parents, they didn't say, you know, Amy's going to go to be a David Berg child bride. It wasn't like out in the open like that. It was very subtle, and I was supposed to be kind of taken in as a talented young child. So I used to sing, and I had a natural gift for harmonizing, which my dad, you know, my dad was a very talented musician, so it was something I picked up with my dad as a young girl. And so they basically would find talented children, including, you know, David Berg's granddaughter and several others, and they would try to bring them into the inner circle slowly and indoctrinate them and, I guess, use their talent for in the cult. And in my case, they used me to record a lot of music for the organization. We had a radio show that was basically being broadcast in several countries on a weekly basis. So I was in the production of that. I was like, you know, a child prodigy, I guess. They were using me as a child prodigy. And eventually, you know, with the open, the new doctrines of open sexuality within the community spread into the children's lives. And they really didn't have any safeguards for the kids. I mean, it was not like the children were taught that they, you know, could say no or they could, you know, refuse advances. So a lot of the adults, even though they didn't maybe do it out in the open, they would do it in secret or sort of on the side, and children didn't feel like they could, report it or say no, and it created quite a problem. And the reason being is because Berg was giving out clues in his writing that condoned it. So how can he be in a group that condones it with his own son and his own, you know, inner circle and family if he was putting out this? It was basically triggering all the would-be pedophiles in the cult to take advantage. And,
yeah, we've seen some of the cartoons that he put out in his Mo letters. Moses was his moniker, and these Mo letters where it's showing drawings of adults with children sexually, and you know, even his the child of his wife, the one, and I guess that leads us to the suicides. His stepson that ended up committing suicide and homicide.
And I think people should try to watch and do some research also, because a lot of this is out there. This information on Ricky Rodriguez is a very good documentary that came out about it, that I think it was covered fairly well. And this kind of gives you a little background into the very tragic story of many of the young children that were raised in the cult, and in particular, you know, like Ricky's story, Mary Berg's story.
And Mary Berg,
you know,
Mary
some
Berg
of the
is
older
your
ones.
Friend. Excuse my voice, I'm so sorry. Mary Berg is his own daughter that died recently, and you've done a lovely job, Amy, of memorializing her. I saw the Facebook site, and that was another tragedy, his own daughter, who I think in court may have even alleged, and please correct me any mistakes I make on my, but I had a little bit of a head injury recently, but if I make any mistakes, please correct me, but wasn't his daughter the alleging in court and stood up in court that he, I think, even molested, the cult leader even molested her?
Yeah, she was his granddaughter. She was my
her granddaughter.
So
we were both
born into the cult, and she was the granddaughter. We were both little children living in France with our parents, and we were both called in to the music unit that was being directed by David Berg at the time. So let's fast forward a little bit, because all of that kind of information is sort of redundant, not that it's not important to address. But the important thing that I think that I would like to talk about is how do you experience something like this and come out on the other side of it and understand what happened to you and move forward and heal in your life. And this is something a lot of people right now are coming to this realization. We're not just an isolated cult. There are so many cults and so many organizations that follow these same patterns, these abusive patterns of victimizing children and victimizing vulnerable people and sectors of society, usually people that have been traumatized, maybe the mentally unstable or mentally ill, you know, people coming out of addiction or drug addiction and that need purpose. So you have to take a closer look at that. And I think one of the ways that we can heal and one of the ways that we can move forward after all this sort of tragic experience is to really delve into understanding the signals and the tactics that were used that brought it, like learning from history, that brought about this, the situation that condoned the systematic ritual abuse of children. I mean, it's so bad when you look at it now, you're like, how did this happen? But at the time, it was everybody was compliant. This was accepted as gospel, essentially.
Yes.
And how
it
do you
seems
take
like
someone
we who, give a pass, these religious leaders get a stature that gives them a pass. You know, my wife and I met in a very fundamentalist Christian college, and one by one over the years, Amy, leaders that were revered in that world, one that got me into the school and others that were preached from the pulpit of this huge ministry, one by one I discovered were predators, molesting one of their children, sexually molesting other kids. You know, one of the youth ministers who brought my brothers and I into it, sharing the Bible and all that, I found out later molested a couple of my family members when they were younger. But we turned a bit of a blind eye because, they're so elevated. And Moses David Berg was looked at as a prophet, wasn't he, to the group?
He was. He was revered by his followers as of God, that he was some kind of, I guess you'd say, pastor or, a prophet. And anything he said was basically the current interpretation of Scripture, and was basically like the Holy Spirit through human flesh, interpreting Scripture. And a lot of people came out of Christian and church backgrounds. So they had the foundation of the Bible. They had the basic foundation of, you know, Judeo-Christian philosophy, I guess, in their childhood. The people that joined, my father was a devout Christian boy. I read some of his writings as a young man, and he was very devout, very sincere. He would pray every night,
yeah.
and he really believed in God, and he wrote beautiful songs as a young boy to the Lord.
Yeah,
and
I liked his music and heard some of it. And I have a friend, Amy, who's a therapist that helps people coming on the other side of cults, named Marlene Winnell. She wrote a book called Leaving the Fold. But she said something that your comment on your dad made me think of just now. But she said to me that, Richard, the people that get hurt the most by a cult or a toxic religious group are the very sincere, zealous, on-fire believers like your dad. And I was one of those as well in the evangelical world, and was hurt a lot when I found out, you know, that which was fake or hypocritical or toxic. And she said, the people that are like, I'm 1 foot in, I go to church, but it's just a compartmentalized aspect of my life. But someone like your dad that's writing these songs to the Lord and loves the Lord and is on fire in his faith, these are the ones that often get damaged the worst, she said.
And this is a very sad thing for me to watch, because I do believe that our parents made some very poor decisions. And I do believe that the generation that joined these cults and got caught up into the structure and basically enabled it, I think that they are also, in many cases, victims of circumstance. And they were also victims of a very manipulative and I would call it, it's intelligent. It's a very manipulative, intelligent way of using scripture and using faith and using religion to pervert people. And it's I guess some in the Christian community you call it very diabolical, and I would say maniacal as well. And it was perpetrated. Someone with a lot of intelligence. I think that David Berg and his, you know, whoever was assisting him, they were men of intelligence. They were men and women that knew more than the people they were recruiting. They had an intellectual superiority. And because of that, and with psychology, they knew about psychology. And so they were recruiting these young people that were so idealistic, so believing, so trusting, that had very little education and experience to fall back on. So they did
that's
not
a key
see the
point. That's a really important point, too, when we talk about exiting. And I'm so glad we've met Amy. And I think there's even more to our connection than this show. I'm directing a film about – I play in the film a religious leader who's a predator and uses religion to manipulate people. And when the film screens, you know, next year and is coming out, I want to use the film as a chance to, you know, let people know if they've been in a cult or toxic group that there's help to come out on the other side. So the reason I say all that is I think hopefully we can remain in touch, because I think, you know, this interview and your story, and we can work with others to help others. I think the films can also draw others out that have been hurt. But you mentioned education a moment ago. So when you grew up in this cult, I'm assuming, and correct me if I'm wrong, that your education, was it confined to a homeschool type of situation within the cult, or did you go to a regular school?
Oh, no, absolutely. The only education outside of the cult that I had prior, you know, in my childhood was I went to public school in France as a young girl in French. So I was fluent in French as a child. I went to kindergarten, first grade, second grade, until I was sent away from my family. So my family did put me in school in France, and those are some of the best years of my life that I can remember. It's when I was between the ages of, I guess you'd say, 5 and 8. And I did receive a basic reading, writing, arithmetic in French. And at home, my mother also taught me from, I guess you'd say, you know, what is it called when you have books that are from a series, a correspondence course. That's what it was called. So we did have some textbooks that some of our mothers used with us. But as far as the institution of the family, they were only allowed to use textbooks that were created by Berg and his immediate, they would call them World Service Units. They were units that answered directly to Berg, that were in charge of production of pamphlets and books and materials that were used for educating and using within the community. And so,
so he had control of this, which
absolute control.
Yeah, you're not going to get a balanced view of the outside world this way. And it seems like the exodus out of the cult, which you're just such a hero that you escaped with your children out. It seems like it would be really tough and scary to transition if you don't have education and job skills or whatever. I mean, you're cut off from the outside world. I mean, on a very small scale, as an example, Amy, we were watching this morning a science documentary, and it was a popular science documentary on PBS. And when we were in the fundamentalist college, they demonized this science documentary and the guy that did it, that we can't watch it, that's bad, you know, because they had a very, you know, one view of science, and that was the only view we were supposed to be exposed to, which was the Earth was a few thousand years old and created in 6 literal days, and you shouldn't even listen to any other, you know, theories. So, but watching it this morning, I thought, wow, here I am, middle-aged, Amy, and I'm watching, and I love science as a boy. I won some science fair contests when I was little. But I'm thinking, here I am. It's like you're playing catch-up in a way when religion takes away your exposure to things. And I wondered, for someone that's been in that kind of world, how do you transition? I imagine it's tough to, when you don't have a lot of education and experience and job skills in the outside world. And some of the women, their only contact with the outside world is sent out to flirty fish as sacred prostitutes, so to speak, to get men in the cult. Mm-hmm. Is it a really tough thing for people that come out and then have to try to pay bills and make money? And
you know, I never had to do flirty fishing because I was a child at the time, and I know a lot of our mothers did. My mother didn't. She got to do other things. She was kind of smart in the way that she avoided it, but a lot of people that were involved in that, they created their own identities based on their sexuality. And as women, I think we were even more disadvantaged because it was a very chauvinistic society. Like, the men were given preference with everything. And they based it on Judeo-Christian doctrines, actually. And I think that was encouraged and reinforced by the predominant male superiority that was in scripture, that they took it to the extreme. And as you know, the Bible doesn't, you know, promote, you know, misogyny and all that to that extreme. But it can be interpreted to, it, you know, if given the right, you know, charismatic, you know, person who's very smart, and the way they twist the scriptures and the way they twist the philosophy. And I think that what happened is a lot of the women were disadvantaged and were also had very low self-esteem. So when you're leading out into a world that you're not prepared for and you don't have self-esteem as a woman in your own intelligence and in your own skills, and all you know how to do is take care of children and cook and clean and take care of a man, it's a very daunting task. But one of the things that I have to say, and a lot of people have their mothers to look up to as role models, and in our cases, we did not have strong mother role models. So finding your role model, finding the people that you look up to, finding people that you want to emulate and be like, is an amazing experience, because you're looking at something from an adult's point of view, and in my case, as a mother with daughters and children that you need to train, and you become that role model for them without one yourself. So it's a very interesting prospect. But in my case, I think that I had to make that journey, but it's made me a stronger person, because I think that the stark difference between not having any strong female role models in my life to being able to find that, and especially find that in myself, to find that confidence that I can be a capable, brave, and powerful woman.
Yeah, you certainly are. You're a Wonder Woman, Amy, and you're a hero and a role model. And you know, this has been pervasive even in the evangelical Christian world. Also, we've known some women that have been very depressed and some suicide attempts because they were with a guy that his favorite verse was "Submit unto me as unto the Lord," and they couldn't even have a difference of opinion and so suppressed. So. You know, you're a real inspiration how you escaped all of this. Is it okay to share your business? You created your own business, or would you rather not mention that in this forum, or can we mention that?
Well, absolutely. I think I guess you would say there's two things that I consider myself having come into my own. Is I'm an artist, and I'm also I've formed my small family base. It's grown, but it's a artistic, creative, entertainment business for children's events, family events. We do things for companies, for grand openings, and it's all art-based. Art has been a huge part of my therapy and my recovery is using my creative side. I've always been a good creative person. As a child, I would write my own music and songs, and I've been writing poetry, and I've always escaped into art as a form of, I guess you'd say, recovery.
Yeah, I think it's so healing, Amy. I really do. In fact, my spiritual viewpoint is that there's nothing more spiritual if, you know, the Creator created all things. There's nothing that reflects the divine image more than when we are creative and we create. It's and your art is fantastic. We have some of your paintings on the radio site. People that are listening, as the photos are going by, there's some photos of you standing by your paintings, and you do parties for children. And is there a way people can see more of your art or see more of your business?
Yeah, absolutely. We are on Facebook. We're also on, we have a website. It's called Party Poppers Entertainment, and you can look us up online. Maybe I can give you a link. And
great.
It's a very small business. It's family run, so it's small. My children are actually involved, and they're all artistic and creative. And as they're going through college, they like to help me on the weekends to develop this business. We have clients like the Marriott, FedEx Express, the Orange County Fire Department. I mean, we do a lot of events for some pretty renowned companies here in Orange County and Los Angeles. So I would say it's been fairly successful, and it's been something that's allowed us to also use creativity to inspire children and young people. And I think since I started doing what I'm doing, I've seen children grow by attending their birthday parties and grow into young adults. And some of them have gone on to become artists because of what I inspired them. So,
wonderful. Well, you've been a big success, Amy. I believe success is to take the talents we've been blessed with and make something out of it, and you have truly done that. What happened to your other family members, Amy, that were in the cult?
Yeah, and just as a quick little thing is, we are also working on a not-for-profit project to help take people in and to help heal, and it's called Safe Passage Foundation is the one
Safe
that
Passage
I've
Foundation.
Been working on.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's one way people can find out more information about our scholarship program. And also...
That's wonderful.
The Victory Garden Sanctuary is a new project that we're working on to create a space for people to come, like an emergency landing place for
mm-hmm.
people that are involved in difficult situations or being trafficked, especially women and children. And that's something you can take a look at. Just a little part of what the things that I get involved with.
That's wonderful. SafePassageFoundation.org. That is fantastic. We'll open up to questions in just a minute. I just had
I guess a couple quick questions. What happened to your family, Amy, that was in the rest of your family? Because you were the one that got out. And how about, were you the only one that got out, or what happened to everyone else?
No, everybody got out. I actually was the last one to get out because I had three young children, and I was in a marriage, and my ex-husband didn't want to leave, so it made it very complicated. We were in Brazil. And eventually we did get out, but my mother left the earliest with my two sisters, and then my dad left back in Germany with my brother and my other sister. So, I mean, everyone left in the 80s, and
okay.
then I left in the late 90s. So because I was married and in a different country, it took me longer to get out. But they all left. My father did commit suicide in, you know, about 19 years ago, and he was in his 40s. He was very young when he did so, and this was shortly after he left the cult. And this is also something I addressed in the piece from A&E. But one of the reasons was that he did fall into a depression, and a lot of the details are too lengthy to go into, but they all have to do with the way that the cult oppresses people. And he had been pretty much given his entire life to an ideology that he later found out was a lie. And I think that realization was very hard for him to deal with.
Yeah, that sense of regret to give all that time to something and then to find out, that seems to be a big theme I'm hearing from people that get out of cults and toxic religious groups is, oh, my God, I gave my best years. I gave my youth to this. I can't get it back. But it seems like we have to have faith that we can have a comeback and have a good life after it, as you said, to come out on the other side and heal. I have one other question, and then those of you listening, you can send in questions to RichardRossiLive@gmail.com, or you can call in your questions to the number on the screen, 347-637-2379, and give a comment or question. I know some of you have been in the cult as well that are listening, if you want to add anything, or send it by email if you'd rather not speak with us live. But I wanted to also ask, Amy, I found in friends of mine that have escaped cults that they land in different places. You know, I've seen some, you know, become people that just don't want anything to do with any kind of religion and become agnostic or atheist. I've seen others feel like they get a healthier view of faith in God and say they don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak, but they have a healthier view of God that's more personal and not following a cult leader and more of their own understanding. And if you don't want to answer this, I don't want to ask you anything uncomfortable, but I was curious where you and your family are in terms with faith, God, church. Is that something you were able to get into?
Well, I think for me, my faith is also a very personal and private matter. I think that because I was kind of forced to believe a certain way for so much of my childhood, and I was sort of pressed into a mold. When you're taught something from the time you're very, very young and that's all you know, changing your mind and finding your true faith. Like I was, my dad prayed with me to receive God, you know, when I was 2 years old. And I started memorizing the Bible when I was, I guess, four. From the time I could talk, I was on a very strict memorization schedule. And I learned the entire book of Revelations by the time I was 13 years old.
Wow.
I was basically meant to memorize almost all of the pertinent chapters in the Bible. And I did. I literally, I think, I if you look at all the highlights of the words of Jesus and the Psalms and the Proverbs and all the, you know, the, I guess, chapters in Daniel and Isaiah that deal with the end times, that was very integral to their doctrine.
Mm-hmm.
I pretty much
so they believed the end was near, the end of the world was coming, there was a lot of end times
that
type
was
of stuff.
A huge part of their doctrine. Like the sex aspect was one of the big scandalous parts of their doctrine, but one of the main doctrinal issues that they dealt with was in prophecy. They were very keenly interested in Bible prophecy when it relates to the end times.
Mm-hmm.
So I really was taught that I was not going to live past 16, that Jesus was coming back, and a lot of those passages in the Bible were memorized. So
yeah, that can be, I think, a control device probably, because then why aspire to live your own life or have goals or, you know, go to college? Or it can almost be like, well, it's all going to end soon anyway. So it becomes another way to control the flock, so to speak.
So I guess when you say, like, what do I believe? Like, once I left, one of the things that I had to do was to just kind of have a read. And I, because of what I went through with the cult, I couldn't just label myself as what I, you know, a religion or this, I believe this or I believe that, because we were actually labeled as Christians and missionaries is what they called us. So every time I would look at any religion, I guess I would say I'm a lot more skeptical than those people. Because
I think that's good.
I know
that's,
my,
you're getting, you got your critical thinking back to be
I
skeptical.
And I am a very critical, I'm a critical thinker, you know, by nature. I always have been. Even as a child, I didn't accept everything they taught me. So one of the things is education, knowledge, and also having your own personal relationship with your faith and what you believe. Like, why do we believe what we believe? Because of what we've experienced and because it rings true to us. And so for me to find that within me meant kind of maybe washing away some of the old concepts and allowing myself to ask what I truly believe. And to be quite honest, I mean, that's something I am doing still to this day.
Yeah, it seems
that.
Like it's a real process, that it's not a, you didn't get indoctrinated in the cult overnight, and the process of recovery is not overnight. And I love how you said restart, because my laptop acts up. Last night my friend was over and we were doing some editing on this film and things were really messing up, and he said, let's restart the computer. And, you know, to just start from square one all over again and just put it together, you know, piece by piece, what you feel. And by the way, the phones are lighting up. So, Amy, just hang on, Amy. We'll be back in like about 10 seconds and get some of the other callers in. This might be your friend
great.
You mentioned. So we'll be right back. Just hang on there, Amy, and we'll be right back with some of the comments and calls, and we'll be right back and tell your friends we're still going. I think we're going to go a bit longer here because it's just so interesting, and I'm asking for a little extension of time so we can get into some more questions. How Amy Breaux escaped the children of God, and as she said, the most important thing we'd like to focus on, which is a real passion of mine, is how do you come out on the other side and heal from something like this? Right back with other comments and questions.
You search, you probe, your mind, your spirit becomes weary. You find yourself on a journey to find a talk show, not just an ordinary talk show, but a Christian talk show, unlike anything the mind could fathom. Suddenly, your search comes to an end, for up ahead, there's a signpost. Your next stop, the Rich Rossi Live Zone.
Welcome back to Richard Rossi Live. We have a caller. The first caller is 760, and your first three digits are 521. We'll get to you in just a second. Be patient. I knew you've been holding a few minutes. But we did have an email question come in from Blake. And maybe we can address this and go to the first caller. Blake said that sometimes those sexually abused have problems being sexual with their spouse or partners because it's triggering and traumatizing. And wondered if it's difficult for people that were sexualized in the cult or sent out to be prostitutes to recruit for the cult, if there's a recovery they need to go through before they can have a healthy relationship romantically or sexually with someone. Do you have any comment on that, Amy?
I think that it's different in every case. I think that there's a lot of information out there that addresses these topics professionally and by doctors, and I think that all of it is very helpful to anyone who's ever been through abuse. And everyone's journey is a little bit different. I was married when, by the time I was 17, and I had a 16-year marriage to a man my age. So a lot of that, I think that having children and having being in love with a man and being devoted to one person for a long period of time was actually very helpful for me.
Yeah.
And until we had religious differences, I think that that was very healing for me. And the fact that I was able to be a mother and to, you know, I think that I was pretty lucky in that respect. I think I'm pretty normal.
Yeah.
If you can say there is any such thing as normal, right? But I think that a lot of other people experience a lot different and more complex issues that need intensive therapy, I would say, in counseling to restructure.
Yeah, get a therapist on that.
And
I have an author that I'm going to recommend to the listeners if this is an issue for anyone. Stacy, S-T-A-C-I, Haynes, H-A-I-N-E-S. She is a therapist that specializes in healing trauma from sexual abuse. One of the books, I don't know if it's hard to get, it's an older book, it's called Survivor's Guide to Sex, How to Have an Empowered Sex Life After Child Sexual Abuse. She has some newer ones. That's an older one. But if you Google her name or the topic, you know, there's healing, and I think a counselor and therapist is great. Well, I'm going to walk over here to the phone lines. On line one, we have your first three digits are 760. I'm not going to give your full number for your anonymity, of course. 760, and then your first three are 521. You're on live now. Who is this?
Hi, this is Anna. I'm actually...
Hi, Anna. Amy told me about you. Welcome.
Thank you.
And were you also in the Children of God, Anna?
Yes. I was born in the group in 1975. So I've been listening to Amy speak, and I was in a completely different area of the world, but experienced a lot of similarities, including, you know, going to public school for a time. So there must have been some edict that came out by leadership, you know, about that. I think there was, but I think a lot of us in our generation went through very similar things.
And you were born into the cult. How have you been doing on this $20 million question Amy put out there? Is how do we come out on the other side and heal?
Yeah. I left the group when my daughter was born. She was about 2 weeks old, and her father and I left. And in the well woman's appointment that I went to, the nurse was asking me just general questions. And in the course of that conversation, you know, a bunch of stuff came out. And by the end of our interview, she said to me that it would be very beneficial for me to do therapy. So when I got into college, I took advantage of the therapy program that was coming from the University of Kentucky.
Oh, that's great. So you were able to get free counseling because you were a student and they had a psychologist on staff at the school?
It was, yes, it was a psychologist who needed hours. So she has a senior, you know, diploma, but this is the hours for certification. And it wasn't free, but it was reduced cost. And that was, you know, talk therapy. And I came to some super clear epiphanies, the greatest one being that I was going to be able to, if I continued to focus on mastering my mind and understanding post-traumatic stress and other types of things, that I was going to be able to function well.
Yes.
And
that's a big one you just hit there, post-traumatic stress disorder. I was actually, my wife and I have both been in some kind of cultish fundamentalist circles in our past, and my therapist diagnosed me with PTSD, and that's a huge understanding. What were some of the PTSD symptoms that you experienced, Anna?
When I was in my early 20s, whenever the sun would go down, I would go into this mental state where it was full depression. It almost felt like paralysis, to where I had to lay down as soon as the sun went down. I lost all energy and almost like went comatose many times. That was one of my reactions. But I manifested an eating disorder as a teenager, and that took me years and years, and that was really the majority of my focus. But the post-traumatic stress, I think mostly for me, has been related to connecting my mind to my emotions. There's been, a disconnect, if you will, that I've had to work to realign. When I'm triggered, there's kind of like a physical anxiety, not clear thinking, that type of thing. I think I always had pretty good control of it. What I did, instead of letting it manifest into a panic attack or some type of anxiety, I internalized it and, made it as small as I possibly could. And that was a survival mechanism, but it doesn't serve me now. So that's been, an ongoing process.
Wow. How about you? Did you have also, Amy, some sort of PTSD experiences where, even though you rationally knew you were away from the cult, you would sometimes have moments of fear or nightmares or thinking you're still like under them in a way?
Absolutely. So it definitely took me, because I was in a fight or flight mode most of the time when I first left, because I was just in survival mode for several years, just trying to keep my head afloat, trying to support my kids as a single mother, and just trying to kind of figure out my place in the world and educate myself. I think I kind of put everything on the back burner, and I think everything was kind of put on pre-hold so that I could just make it. You know what I mean? So when I finally started having time to think about what was really going on under the surface, I realized that I had built up some very strong emotional barriers that were protection mechanisms that, you do when you have PTSD. Your mind kind of rewires itself automatically to deal with difficult circumstances and trauma. So when I started to address some of these issues, I realized that some of these things serve you short term, but long term they're very detrimental. And then you can have panic attacks that you don't even know consciously where they're coming from, but they're coming from a deep subconscious space. And you can't put your finger on why, but you have terrible anxiety and depression all of a sudden. And you don't know what it is, but it's physical. You literally, your heart's racing, your breath is forced, you have these waves of emotion that are very negative, that kind of come in and seize you, And the other thing is building trust. Building trust has been a huge issue for me that I've had to work very hard, is how to let people into your space. Because once your space and your personal sovereignty essentially has been violated by people that claim to love you and claim to have your best interest at heart, it's very hard to trust again. And I've always kind of held on really tight to, my freedom and my, I don't like to be under people's, I guess you'd say, well-meaning, intentioned direction. And one of the reasons is because I was for so many years, and it wasn't for my good. So just reestablishing people that I can trust, and I even like role models I look up to, has been a process for me. And even working with different counselors, I'm very picky, and there are some counselors that I just ran the other direction because I just didn't feel right. I felt like they didn't have a handle on what was going on with me. So that's a very big challenge, you know, for those of us who have gone through these kinds of things, with spiritual, emotional, and physical abuse, because it's on all points. It's not just physical abuse. It's not just physical and emotional, but it's also spiritual. So you've got a lot of work to do, and a lot of self-awareness is needed for that. And I think that that's really helped me, is to allow myself to be self-aware, allow myself to even have the pain, is let the pain in and open up to it and understand what it is and why I have this pain and why I have this distrust, and then start building from there. And I think EMDR, some of those tools of, I guess you'd say, exposure therapy have been really good, just to address your fears, talk about them, and deal with the, what they really are. You know, that's the first step, I think, addressing it and understanding what is going on, and also learning, you know, breathing techniques for panic attacks. And it's gotten easier. It's gotten better. Things have really improved for me. And of course, but it's a daily fight. And I am still learning how to work with it.
Yeah, it seems like a big part for both of you, Amy and Anna, is to move from what they call an external locus of control, where all the Mo letters and the leadership and the spiritual guidance is from the outside, the cult leader, the cult, and you're now both learning to trust the internal, still small voice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as Jesus
Absolutely.
Said, the kingdom of God is within you. You know, so that's a big part. You know, it's inside. You know, like Glenda the Good Witch said to Judy Garland or Dorothy in Wizard of Oz. You know, darling, you had this inside you all alone. You didn't have to go outside to this wizard to get it, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that the case for you as well, Anna, that it's a very internal process, this healing?
Yeah, I mean, it's a spiral path. I think that there's epiphanies that go over the same topics at a deeper level as you're able to peel away the layers, because you can only deal what you're able to face. I think we have a lot of friends and family that have not fared as well as we have. And I think that a lot of that has to do with not having opportunities presented to them like I did. And so, you know, Ricky Rodriguez, as an example,
yes.
You know, the stories have become very tragic. But it is.
Do you have a moment on? I'm sorry to cut you off for
sure.
A moment, but you triggered a question, and that is, do you have a moment, either of you, when you see someone like Ricky or like Mary, or family members that didn't get the help that you two have got to recover, to heal? Do you have a moment where you're just like, oh God, I wish they could have got the help. I wish they could have got a place to talk about this, or to get some therapy, or to, you know. It's you two have been able to come back. You two, to me, are like, and as a man, forgive the sports analogy, but I grew up in Pittsburgh where we won all these Super Bowls because in the last half of the game, even though the first half sucked and we did bad, they would come back, you know, and the great teams would come back.
Mm-hmm.
And you two have come back from this.
Right.
But do you have some pain when you think of, you know, Amy's father, a gifted musician, wonderful spiritual man,
right,
in despondency taking his life, or Ricky, that must be a feeling of, gee, why couldn't they get the help?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the frustration and the helplessness of thinking about our loved ones that, you know, are not faring as well or have left this realm, you know, the only way to really counteract that is to figure out how to take action. And that's the reason that our counterparts created Safe Places Foundation, you know, quite a while ago, actually, and it's been able to support our counterparts, those that needed help, And they've been doing a good job of that and you know, are very focused on creating more support like that. But we're also working, Amy kind of alluded to it, on another program called Victory Garden Sanctuary. Mm-hmm. And that's victorygardensanctuary.org. And it's going to be a physical landing spot. So a boarding, you know, kind of guest home. And we have our 501c3 status as well. And we're activating right now and putting the plans together, the business plan. And our intention is to offer...
Can you give that website again?
Sure. VictoryGardenSanctuary.org.
Well, that is wonderful. So this will be a safe place for people that are escaping. They can land there.
That's what it will be. And we're planning to have a therapy program with professionals and offer multimodal therapy, which means, you know, we want to have a minimum of three types of therapy options for them at once. Because I had some amazing epiphanies with talk therapy, but I was also doing self-help. I was, you know, doing meditation. I was doing dream journaling. I was, you know, documenting my dreams, and I was doing just journaling on the self-help books and all that. And I think that the combination of more than three therapies really created an environment for epiphany to bubble up. So that's what our intention is, to have many types of healing therapies available to them so they can just really soak up the experience and rest.
And along with like the creative therapies that have to do with you know, body positive, like yoga,
yeah,
dance, art therapy, animal,
mm-hmm,
you know, caring for animals,
right,
you know, those are all things that you can do that are interactive. That,
yeah,
are
these things are all so healing, just like the
therapy
art has been for you, Amy, because a lot of times the cults, they put us in this gray world that cut us off from life and the beauty of the world and animals and nature. And so this is all part of the recovery, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and then also after this, we're also going to offer different types of career-based apprenticeship. So,
oh, that's great,
Victory,
because
Garden,
we mentioned that, as you may have,
yep,
heard, Anna, that, you know, this is scary for people. How are they going to pay their bills? They've lived in this,
mm-hmm,
isolated world.
Yes. So, you know, some of the curriculum for this aspect is shadowing in all departments of, you know, some type of business. Victory Garden Sanctuary is going to have a produce company. We're going to have a garden and, you know, run a business. And, you know, people will be able to come and timeshare for produce. But also we want to be selling to local restaurants and just really help develop their understanding of career and helping them find a place that they can excel within kind of a corporation or a company that has different departments and stuff like that. So, you know, my career, I've been in corporate America for the past 17 years. And so that's really my background. I was able to get a bachelor's degree in business. So I'm excited about developing that kind of adulting 101, body language, boundaries, you know, kind of some basics for taking,
wow,
them out into the world after. Yeah.
Wow, this is a powerful, powerful thing that you've both done. Well, I hope we get to stay connected. This hour has just whipped by, but, you know, this link is good to share, and I know it's going to be helpful to a lot of people, so we're going to share it a lot on our social media, and we've had a lot listening today, but we'll have even more in, you know, cumulative listeners is in perpetuity. This link is out there for people to replay this show. Wow, you are two powerful, powerful women, and I am so excited. I'd like to keep in touch as this develops, these this healing place, this sanctuary.
Absolutely.
And, you know, as my film's getting out next year, there'll be a lot of people that we're going to need to give resources, so I'm sure we'll share this link with them and also what you're doing. Why don't you both, even though we're a bit over time, give a final word. Why don't you, Anna, share your last thoughts you'd like to leave with the listeners, and then you, Amy.
So Amy alluded to this earlier. I think that what we experienced was a microcosm of what happens at larger levels, but also is still actively happening today. I think the awareness of the public of the fact that there are, you know, 300,000 children being trafficked in America today, and it's because people aren't aware of what they're looking at when they see things. People are not actively realizing that they can participate in, you know, keeping the youth safe. So for our counterparts who are in the group that are not actively engaging a healing process, I just want to say that it's never too late to start. And if you're struggling, then, you know, reaching out and finding resources is really a critical part of, you know, elevating your emotional and mental place.
Powerful. And how about you, Amy? Just whatever from your heart you want to leave with us today.
Well, first of all, I'd like to really thank you for having us today. And it's been a real pleasure for me to talk to people like yourself that have an active interest in learning and hearing about these experiences. I know some of your experiences probably led you to your researching in this field, and I think more people need to talk about it. I'd like to encourage people to create more of a openness for this type of conversation. And in today, with so many means of communication, so many platforms, sometimes it's almost overwhelming. Like, we don't even know where to start. There's so many places that we can have conversations. But find the people, find the network and the communities where you can feel the most comfortable, and start the conversation. And I think you'll find that we can all help each other a lot more than we think we can. And there's a lot more help out there available. So instead of hiding in our own little houses and homes with our own, you know, suffering and silence, I think bringing it out to the open and reaching out is really a key. And in my life, I can say that with all my heart that I have really... My success has been largely due to people who listened, people that allowed me to have a voice, people that accepted me and didn't judge me, or people that didn't jump to conclusions and label me, but they created a space of healing. And I think we all can do that more in our communities instead of being so judgmental and so harsh. And kindness goes a long way, you know, because everybody that you meet has something they're carrying. It may not be a cult experience, or it may not be abuse, but there's something. And it's a human condition to have pain and to deal with pain and trauma, especially childhood pain and trauma. So I think that we need more compassion. We need more understanding. And I think we can all heal together.
Yes, yes. I pray abundant blessings and continued healing for all of us. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Amy and Anna, you are both so fabulous, and you are both so powerful on the show today. And we're going to be sharing this link, which is good now to share now for those that missed it live. And I hope you both stay in touch. I really am elated to see that you two are a part of this, what I call the Underground Railroad, just the way the Underground Railroad helped the blacks that were oppressed and were slaves to get free. You two are doing that for people that have been enslaved to these bizarre and perverted cults. You're part of an Underground Railroad to support other victims' escape.
Yeah.
Yeah, and please reach out and contact us if there's anything we can do or any resources that we can that we have available, we'll do whatever we can. And also, if you're listening and you want to help and you want to be part of the solution as well, that's what we need you to, you know, that we
can
do this
contact,
together.
And what contact, why don't we reiterate any contacts either of you want to give before you go?
I mean, victorygardensanctuary.org has a contact page.
Okay.
And gives a really detailed understanding of the vision as of right now. And, you know, that's a good contact.
Great. Any other contacts, or you want to leave it there?
I mean, if you're interested in helping out with scholarships, or if your business wants to do a fundraiser or be involved at all with offering any kind of, you know, maybe you're a counselor and you want to get involved with helping in this field, and you would like to offer your services at a discounted rate, or even work on pro bono, you know, projects, then that's another thing that you can also, we have a registry called the ROAR, and it's on safepassagefoundation.org, and it's where you can sign up to offer something, or maybe you want to, you know, be a resource to offer, you know, job training or an internship, and or you have a scholarship that you need to give out to someone who really needs an education, who could really benefit from it, then, you know, these are places that still have a huge, we have a huge need for these types of things. So,
wow, that's great.
You know,
those
please.
Are some wonderful creative ideas of how people can help. Well, Amy and Anna, you have a wonderful rest of your day with yourselves and your families and your children. I'm very grateful, and this is really,
thank
really
you.
Important work that you've done today by sharing your stories. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the chance.
Thank you. Yes, have a wonderful day. Thank you.
Thanks, Anna and Amy, and thank you to all of you for tuning in today to Richard Rossi Live. And we have some really interesting upcoming shows that we'll be sharing with you. A very pioneering bishop, Jim Pike's widow, will be with us shortly. And so just stay tuned, keep following the show. And he was a pretty controversial bishop that stood up against a lot of things and left quite a legacy and had a mysterious death in the desert right around the area where Jesus died. And he's a very fascinating story. Bishop Jim Pike's widow will be with us, and we have some other celebrity guests coming up in the near future. So go with God and be blessed, and thank you for tuning in. And please share this link to anyone you know who has been hurt by cults and toxic religion. We've got to continue this underground railroad and help these other victims escape the enslavement. God bless.